Charles with Eric Clapton with None of Us Are Free. This is from Ray Charles's 1993 album, My World. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. How about that? The connecting number is 888-874-4888. And we're looking to ramp up our ability to put things into proper context. We don't have to be right or wrong. It's not a matter of that right or wrong. It is whether you're building a solid argument, and that's what we're looking for. Things are getting very dicey indeed in Washington. But you know, here's the thing. We have to look at things in perspective. It's nothing surprising that it is turmoil and chaos. It started out that way. And the Republican Party and the Democratic Party are doing what they historically have done, except with this president, there is a very important difference in the way things, or the way he wants things to be done. It may not necessarily conform with the way that things historically are done, or the way things constitutionally are done, but we'll see how it turns out. The one thing I don't want us to do is to really reach the point of paranoia, and to fret, and every morning the first thing on your mind is, oh my God, what is going on in Washington, D.C. today? Our attitude should now be, as they say, que sera, sera. Whatever it is they're doing, because they're in charge and we are not. And we have to build for ourselves a structure, something that allows us to do what is the primordial order of the day, which is to survive. We must survive, and the number one thing is to remain calm as we put ourselves and our situation in order. It's depressing that we don't see enough of the evidence that even in our communities things are in order, but we should not psychologically cave in and basically yield to the order of the day that is to be our task. Our task is to have Donald Trump control 100% of our minds and our actions and our thinking. We have to live, and we have to live smartly, which is why analyzing things, looking at how things are unfolding, making sense of these things and how they connect with each other and how they possibly can or in fact are impacting our lives, that's what we need to do. And to get an agenda that helps us feel more secure in our survival. It is not a done deal that we will survive, but we can't give all of our energy into worrying about what will Donald do next. We see that there is very, the resistance is not quite in order. It's a matter of people putting Trump first. No, he's not first. He's not first. And when you look at life, you see that groups of people in this country at one time or another have had to face daunting opposition to what they need in order to survive. They've had to go through hell. But they did, because in whatever way they were able to, they fashioned a response to the tenor of the times. Okay, let's get moving at 888-874-4888. This is your time to express yourself. So we start off with Anthony from Harlem. You're on the air.
Hi, hi, you, Teresa. Thank you for bringing up a very important topic.
Thank you. How are you?
Fine. I wanted to talk a little bit about the impact of Russiagate in the black community, and I would say to the susceptibility of, I would say, many of us to the entire Russiagate narrative, in that we swallow the Russia story because it's part of the resistance. And that tendency has been going on. And as the Russian story itself collapses a little bit, the tendency is still there. And I think that is one of the that is something that should be corrected in our communities if we are to, as you point out, analyze the world in any credible way.
Okay, but I don't quite get where you're going. So keep ahead, keep going ahead, and we'll catch on.
Okay, yes. Where I'm going essentially is this, is that there's a narrative, the narrative of Russiagate, whereby, you know, Russia bad, all the things, the stolen election, all these things, and Russia is the enemy, and consequently Trump is friendly with Russia, and hence the resistance must be against, we must fight the Russians, hence our Syria policy, hence our Middle East policy, hence our Ukraine policy. Everything is based upon supporting war. And this tendency towards war is very prevalent amongst the black political class at this point. That's where I'm going with this. And that is something that needs to be challenged.
Okay. Give me an example of how this has played out in your community.
Since my community itself is relatively powerless and does not factor on the stage directly, but essentially it figures out in narratives and conversations that I had, and I think it also is going to play out in, for example, the types of politicians that we will support. And there is the danger.
Okay. Well, how about the community concentrating more on what would help it survive? If that were, let's say, a focal point, how would the current tenor, the current temperature in the community change? What would have to change to get people to focus on what is important for their survival, as opposed to be wrapped up in a scenario in which they have no influence, they have no power to do anything about?
Well, I disagree with that. They have no influence and no power. I just think that we have not exercised influence and power. I mean, you know, there is always a possibility of mass movements, mass protest. You know, we recently had, a few years ago, if you may recall, the Occupy movement. We have had, at certain points, certain upsurges of anti-war sentiments. But recently, and in more recent times, those have entirely disappeared. I would say it's part of the post-Obama years, or I should say the Obama years, and it's a legacy. And I think that is, I think that the community is entirely focused on individual preoccupation, so much so that they just can't be bothered with the larger questions. I don't think we are focused on Russiagate all the time. I think that we're totally consumed by our personal survival anyhow. So I don't think that is the issue.
Okay. Well, thanks for bringing that point to our attention. Let's see how people feel about it. I think you're missing a very important cue. And that is that in all societies, even when it comes down to fighting for justice and equality and all the other high ideals, they leave it to the poor people to do. The poor people, I've been talking about Harlem under siege. These are the words that I'm using. Harlem is being systematically emptied of viable housing that people desperately need. I don't see a huge reaction to that, not just Harlem, but all the black and brown communities that you can think of. They're under siege. And people under siege tend to, if they're you know, still holding on to some kind of sense, they would tend to not spread out, but they would tend to draw themselves in and deal with the major issues at hand. In many cases, the major issues remain the same, except the issue of gentrification, and it's not just gentrification. This is a displacement. This is a coordinated effort. I just talked a couple of days ago about one developer selling part of his portfolio to another in Harlem, you know, for hundreds of millions of dollars. There's big money to be made in poor communities, and they're making it. So that is, to me, a major point of concern, and it is about survival. Now, I don't dismiss your point at all. I think you have a very good point about the tendency to not look at the larger picture until it is unavoidable. But poor people have so much to deal with right now. Everything that you could consider to be a strategic resource is being removed from them. And even so, the reaction to me is not nearly as vigorous as it ought to be, even though their survival is being challenged. So it's a tough call. Where are they to put their energies? What should dominate their concern at the moment? You know, so, but you raise a very good point. And thank you for calling in. Okay, Harvey from Berkeley, how are you? You're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Utrice.
Hey, Harvey.
Top of the season to you and your vast audience.
Popular. What did you say, popular?
What did I say?
Popular. Yeah, you said popular something.
Oh, I said top of the season to you and your vast audience.
Oh, top of the season. Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Okay, well, today I'd like to talk about Trump's wall, which is estimated to cost around $21 billion. And it turns out that the drought has left around 2.8 million people in Central America hungry and thirsty, and Guatemala has declared a state of emergency after 250,000 families lost their crops because of the country's severe drought. And the drought is also affecting parts of Honduras, El Salvador, and South America, which is responsible for so many of these climate change refugees. And I think I have a better idea, a better way to spend just a fraction of that money that'll take to build Trump's wall. So that there'll be a lot less need for these people to leave their countries and end up at our border. And so my idea is to use three off-the-shelf technologies that are already here and well-established that will provide water to help grow their crops as well as fresh drinking water for many of these unfortunate men, women, and children. And the first technology is industrial dehumidifiers. And if you Google the words industrial dehumidifier manufacturers, that's spelled dehumidifier, industrial dehumidifier manufacturers. For more information, these dehumidifiers are very good at precipitating, at harvesting a lot of water out of the atmosphere for drinking, cooking, and watering their crops. And the second off-the-shelf technology are solar panels to supply the renewable electricity to power these industrial dehumidifiers. And the third technology is drip irrigation technology, which has been used to turn barren deserts into lush growing areas with very little waste of water. So if President Trump invests in solar panels to power the industrial dehumidifiers that will harvest water from the air, coupled with drip irrigation technology to irrigate the crops, many of these climate change refugees would be more than happy to stay at home, and we wouldn't have to build Trump's wall.
Well, some people are going to say to you, well, some might be climate change refugees, but the vast majority are fleeing hunger and terror and the end result of poor policy.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. And these have to change as well. But what I'm offering here are actual technologies that will help to reverse and change a lot of these dire situations. And I think that if Trump, especially during this Christmas season, if they have a change of mind, and instead of being so focused on building a wall, that by investing a lot of money in these technologies to help these third world countries, you wouldn't have the problems that we're having now. I know there's other reasons as well, because this is a primary reason. It says here millions of people are actually starving and don't have water. So this is a big one.
Thanks a lot, Harvey, for your call today and your contribution. Always something you offer for our consideration and something worth considering. Thank you so much. Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air. 888-874-4888. Hello.
Yeah, hi there. Hoping that you're having a good day so far.
So far, so good.
I just want to itemize a few things. I want to bring it to people's attention that World War III is knocking on the door. And it is even a bigger threat than the environmental problem. And I think people are not aware of what's going on globally. And we need to have a global approach to what is going on. I also want to say to people who are so nervous about the so-called disarray in Washington, why aren't you nervous about the disarray that this country has been causing? And the so-called disarray in Washington is nothing compared to what this country has done in the past few administrations. And I think it is a disgrace that you're all crying about Trump, but yet you're not crying about million people dead like you're thinking about million flies. It's a disgrace that we're not crying about the shambles that Libya is in. We are worried about the shambles here. but they're not worried about the shambles elsewhere. And so we are suggesting, intimating that the lives of others are is not important. I beg to disagree. And I think that, again, I will reiterate, you deserve Trump because of what you've been causing throughout the world, and you continue to cause. And the mere fact that we're ignoring these things means that we don't plan to change. We only become excited when chicken come home to roost, you know. But what happens when the chicken is roosting elsewhere? And especially when we are the cause of it roosting elsewhere. Look at Fallujah. A city flattened. And we think that Trump has done worse than Bush or Obama. Are we crazy? What is happening here is nothing compared to what's going on. And we must realize that the USA have been trying to instigate a war with Russia. The whole of the Ukraine thing was created by the USA. The shambles that Syria is in is due to the USA.
Because this form of analysis bothers me. Because I'm just going to explain. What bothers me is that we do not get to the point. The point at this juncture is not to necessarily ask the philosophical question of why are we worried about this when we weren't worried about other situations before. That doesn't get us close to an answer. It just raises a question that we actually can't answer. So if I were to press you a little bit and say, well, from your perspective, since you are critical of our approach and our thinking, what should be our response? What should concern us about the condition that we're in?
First of all, what I'm saying is not a philosophical thing. It's a practical thing. It's a nuts and bolts thing. And what we should be concerned about the world at large, not just here. And we must realize that whatever is occurring, it's elsewhere is affecting us here. And also, the propaganda is so thick, most people don't even realize. Like I was hearing Mahat the other day telling me about things I should read. I would love to tell my lovely sister, who I like listening to, that she should read some of the things that I'm reading and look at some of the videos I'm looking at that will dispute all this Russiagate stuff. And most people, I think that we have fell for this propaganda. Even a great part of this audience have fell for this thick propaganda. It's like John Pillinger of Australia said, the most brainwashed people in the world are the people of the USA. And we don't realize what's happened. I want you to remember these two FBI agents, Peter Strzok and McCabe. When before Trump won, they were plotting his overthrow.
What I'm trying to say is you've taken us into territory that is unending compared to our capacity to respond or to even understand. Don't belittle it. It's a legitimate point. We are finite people in the end. People with a finite amount of time and resources, and we have, I just finished talking about the burdens that we have around the world. Working people, poor people. Hold on, let me finish my point.
Okay, I'm sorry.
People all over the world are bearing inordinate burdens already. Should we not consider that with this load that they're carrying already, if they can be helpful in a solution, it has to be practical. And we have to recognize that there's a limit to what people can do. We can't continue shoving the solution at the people. They're not responsible. We keep shoving the solution on people. You have to solve the problem that you did not create. And that's exactly what I'm saying with respect to the situation in Harlem and many other enclaves where housing is systematically being removed from people. They didn't create that, but they have to solve it. They have to do something because it is going to affect them, the whole community. So we cannot, it frustrates me when we have problems that require solutions and people keep making these solutions to be infinite, that we cannot deal with infinite issues. What is the best way, you think, you can, as I say, you're cutting something down to size? How do you do it? You can't keep preaching at people that they ought, you know, they have the wrong narrative. You know, since when did the people have the responsibility for narratives? Yeah, that is it's like pie in the sky. That is not their job. Their job is to survive. What is a workable plan? Something that can be tackled with some degree of success within their lifetimes and considering the limited resources that people have to do anything about a situation. People can't even get better schools, for crying out loud, or drinking water.
You know? Eucharis, one of the problems is that we are underestimating the power of the people. All right?
And no, I disagree with all of that. All of that, to me, all of that is hype talk. We've been talking about the problems of people for a long time, and we've been talking in this ethereal way, as if, you know, they will suddenly be imbued with all the tools, the psychological, emotional, and the physical tools to fix the problem. They cannot. Why can't we understand that?
For you to say that, is a put down of even this particular community right now.
Because not at all.
You are, listen to this for a second. Listen to this for a second. You are part of the people. I am part of the people. The people listening right now are part of the people. The police is part of the people. The soldiers are part of the people. If we educated people in the police, in the military and every job, and make us all realize that we are just like parts of the human body, the eye, the finger, the toenail, etc. It's like when we speak of the human body, there's no one might be serving a different purpose, but it's still part of the same body, and we are all part of the people. The government is part of the people, and it's not us against them. And if we come to that realization, and whenever the government does not do what we want the government to do, if the people went on a strike, the government, we could shut down the government. I hear them always talking about shutting down the government. We could shut down the government. We could shut down the military. Do you know how much the military relies on civilian services? If we shut them down, they couldn't do anything. So the people do have power. And it's wrong for us to keep telling the people they don't have power. What we need to do is to educate the people, awaken the people, make them realize that they're sleeping. And in this particular forum, we should be not just trying to philosophize and intellectualize and sound like we have great vocabularies, etc., but we should be saying things that would instigate the people to go out there and start organizing, to come together to either overthrow the government.
Give me an example of a recent instance in which all these things that you're talking about actually were put to the test and succeeded.
You know what that sounds like, Eutrice? I used to run, I was planning to
you
be
see,
the first
I
man
asked
to...
you a question. You
no, 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 one second. Let me just
like.
Give you this
it
example.
It sounds like exactly as I asked you. That's what it sounds like. It sounds
no,
like
no, 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 no. I want to give you an answer.
I asked you, and then you go into another realm. No, deal with the facts as they are. I posed a question to you based on current reality. I'm asking you to give me an example in which all these things that you talked about actually were done and accomplished with great success.
Well, you know, that uprising in Tunisia, if it was more organized, would have gone somewhere.
Listen, no, no, no. We're not talking if. Give me an example in which
you
the
see,
people...
You treat, you're tying my hands. You're tying my... You're restricting
I'm not talking your hands at all. I'm saying to you that part of the things that we need to keep in mind is what is possible, given the resources.
Everything I suggested is possible if we have a change of mind.
Okay. All right, great. It is possible that everybody should have a well-paying job. It's possible that everybody should have very good housing, and all schools should be doing their job of educating.
And there's an example of that. There's an example of that.
It's
in,
not
in Dubai, everyone gets about a minimum of $50,000 per year in Dubai.
Yeah, but are we in Dubai?
Pardon?
Are we in Dubai?
I'm telling you, it could happen here, too, if our concept of money changes.
I'm not talking about what could happen. I'm saying you have a point of reference, a historical point of reference. It's not about blaming anybody. It is about getting real about how change is made. What happens? How long it takes? As I said to you before. We are talking here, and there are people who don't have water to drink, potable water in Michigan. There are children who can't drink water during the course of the day in New York City schools.
Maybe we should organize the people in Michigan to go out on a mass strike and shut down Michigan.
Maybe we should do that. You're not getting my point.
I'm getting your point.
In the end, if you are an agent of change, you have to accept the dynamics of change, how it happens. What are the good points to it? What are the impediments to it? It doesn't. Not, it's like if we get people to go on strike. You know how much education has to go on for people to go on strike? You know what effort has to be made to persuade people that that is a viable thing to do and that it would work in their interests? You have any idea about the time it takes to elevate people's thinking and to give them the vision that you hope they would share, in a vision in which they are key actors? It takes time. It takes effort. It takes money. We can't do that yet. We haven't had a consistent success about that. For us, the nature of change has come about quite sporadically and in extreme situations. And it only is a spurt. It is not consistent energy. There are dynamics to creating change in certain communities that are oppressed. One of the reasons they are oppressed is they're shut down. That kind of thinking that they can change things. This is not to blame them. These are the facts. This is the reality. Nobody wants to stay with a community over 20, 30, 40 years. Nobody wants to spend protracted time and effort in cultivating a consciousness within a community. It does not happen the way you think it does. So we either deal with the reality that we are experiencing and how best to achieve just a small thing, hoping that it is the beginning of a big thing. But it is monumental when you're dealing with oppressed people to move them from point A to point B as a group. People talk all the time, and I this is a point of contention with me, with folks in our community who have quick and ready solutions. And I say, okay, it sounds great. Where has it worked? So that...
Let me say this in parting. You, hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
Eutrice, we have to, it's just like when we're talking about the third party, right? You could say that to where have it worked, okay? It hasn't worked because maybe we haven't done it the right way. And to keep saying, it was just like when Martin Luther King or anyone as a kid, and people used to say the same thing. It's not possible.
I am not saying it's not possible. I'm saying we look, you have to be realistic about what is achievable within a particular time frame and with the sparse resources that you have. It is not a theoretical exercise. It is a concrete process. What can you do with what you have in the shortest time possible with that would yield the best success, your best chance of success? It's a practical matter. This is not something theoretical. And when you are dealing, as I said, with oppressed people, which means they are also psychologically debilitated, they have to be psychologically rehabilitated, which takes time. So if you go into a situation expecting that within 2 weeks you can get this done, you're crazy. We have to find a different way. But you provided us today with provocative thoughts and questions, and I appreciate that. I really do.
Okay,
because what we ought to be doing now is spending some time elevating our thinking so that it in turn elevates our level of involvement and the level of action. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Lincoln, okay, for calling in today. Ma'at, you're next. You're on the air.
Yes, greetings to the beloved family PRN Collective.
Thank you.
I want to address when Lincoln was really on track recently, when you basically asked what's your approach or what are you going to do right now, something along those lines. And I believe it was Lincoln who came on and said self-mastery, spiritual organization reach, as the Kemet said, know thyself. And he was even so mindful and self-aware to say that he realized at that time that when he expressed himself, he tended to be angry, like he was somewhat in this previous instance. But at that time, he reached beyond and said, you know, I can see myself being angry, so sort of looking above at himself. but it was if he was also saying that when I express the same thing without the anger, perhaps I'm more effective. So the spirituality gives us the physical health, the mental health, the emotional health, and hopefully the activism, as and we know how to move from there. But I also want to suggest, and you know, we don't want to, we want everything to go at your pace because we value you so highly. So, you know, we know there's a certain amount of effort in reaching out to a particular guest and going through that routine. However, there's a brother who's done, you know, worked in intelligence and what's that called? I'm blanking on the
counterintelligence.
Yeah, counterintelligence, right. And his name is Malcolm Nance. And I believe he's done a couple books, but one book in particular, which I haven't gotten to hold of yet, is called The Plot to Destroy Democracy. I think that could be of some good value because as I woke up and I had meant to set the alarm, but I heard a brother talking about Russia Gate and blah, blah, blah. I mean, when you're dealing with a grifter, which New York is, and I'm sure you're familiar with this too, you tweets. This guy, Donald Trump, was essentially a grifter, you know, with all sorts of mythology, like getting a small loan of $1 million. He actually got 400 and some plus million dollars from his father, and it didn't help, and all his businesses crash, you know, and now we basically being crashed in his presidency. So I think we could be more on the same page in terms of, yeah, in fact, Giuliani came out, and boy, I tell you, to have such legal help, he actually came out, and instead of the June date where Trump and company was partnering with the Kremlin with hundreds of millions of dollars and giving Putin a $50 million penthouse, Giuliani admitted that that was through November, okay? So I think we could clear up certain things by maybe bringing Malcolm on. I see him quite a bit on MSNBC, CNN, and of course, there's a whole issue of, you know, where we go from here as we kind of see the wheels coming off with Mattis saying enough is, the defense secretary saying enough is enough. And, of course, we saw him, Utrice, when around the Salmon situation, and there is some positive because the Senate did a unanimous resolution saying that he was responsible for the death, and also they were moving against the War Powers Act from 2001, so that,
you know,
there could
I've
be...
already zoned out.
Huh?
I've zoned out of all of this stuff because it has nothing to do with what I feel we need to do in our everyday lives. We don't need to worry about them. They know exactly what they can do, what they want to do. They have the resources to do it. They have the authority to do it. And they're doing what they want to do. It does not help us to point fingers. Well, look what else they're doing. Well, you know, why shouldn't we start from that point? We have a very corrupt and crooked administration. We haven't. We have a commander-in-chief who, as I said from day one, it's now 2 years down the line. In my head, we've lost 2 years worth of healthy discussion about our survival under somebody who clearly exhibits very many, multiple traits of mental incapacitation. We should be talking about it. This should have been a done deal in our heads 2 years ago, and we would have had a 2-year start in formulating something as a communal response. But here we are still talking and reciting about things that already have been established. Why do we do that? We waste time discovering the painfully obvious. We lose time, we lose momentum, and we lose focus. The focus is not on Donald Trump. The focus is on how will people survive this corrupt administration that doesn't mind at all whether we all die?
That's
the question. This has been a frustration. I openly confess it. I can't understand why we become so obsessed with people like Trump. We should be obsessed about our survival. That's what ought to obsess us. And if we are obsessed with our survival, we are obsessed with organizing, we are obsessed about putting things in our personal lives to the best that we can do, we are engaged in other people in talking about what is on the horizon and how to get ready for it. But we keep repeating the cycle. It drives me crazy. Well, look, another thing that he's doing, and yet another thing that he's doing. We should have accepted from day one.
Some of us have. Some of us have. And
but
I think
not enough. Not enough of us have. And most of us have taken refuge, psychological refuge, in pointing at the things that he's doing to us. It is not an issue, as far as I can see it. That's not a problem. If it was recognized from day one, the proper question is that by now, if we had recognized it and moved with that knowledge, we would have been so far ahead in looking to our survival. But we just talk about all the bad things that they're doing. What did we expect? Did we expect that one day Donald Trump will wake up and he would be all sweetness and light?
No. I think we must analyze what the current news situation is. And at the same time, my main point was what Lincoln iterated in another instance in terms of the self-mastery, know thyself, and then everything falls in place in terms of physical health, mental health, emotional health, and activism. But getting black people to act in a collective manner, that's a nut to crack.
I'm talking about all people, because what's coming is not just about black people. It's about all poor, working poor, working class people are going to be on the other end of this this program.
This fascism is what it's called.
Corrupt. It's coming. And I don't mean to be the Chicken Little crying that the sky is falling, but the sky is falling. So,
thank you.
You know, that's what we ought to do. My frustration is that we are spending our valuable time and resources being enmeshed in somebody else's program, and we know what it is. We know what it is. We may not know the fine details, but we get the big picture. We understand it perfectly.
But some of us don't, though, because some of us seem to be making excuses for him.
We have to leave them behind. We have to pray for them, but let them go. Because when things get to a point of, we talked about Detroit all these elderly people who have been thrown out in the street, thrown out of their houses. And Detroit had an 84% black home ownership rate not too long ago. Mm-hmm. We're acting like, well, it would take some time before things get really, really bad. We ignore the fact that things have already been bad. Mm. They've already gotten bad, and they're about to get worse. And we have to have some kind of awareness of that and stop giving our energy to a lunatic worrying about what he will do next. Even if he does very bad things next, he's got the resources to survive. He and his children will not reach the level of suffering that most of us will reach. So forget them. They have power we don't have. They have resources we don't have. They have intentions that we don't have. Stop worrying about what they're going to do. We got the signal from day one. Nobody could deny that. That from the day, from the first day, I pegged this guy 100% right.
Yes, me too.
Okay.
I'll continue to listen. Thank you.
Thank you, Art, for your call today. Well, let's talk to Leona from Michigan next. Hello, Leona.
Utrice, thank you for taking me.
Thank you for calling, but we have only a little bit of time to spend with each other today before we get
Okay. All right. Well, let me get right to the point. I want to thank you for your efforts to encourage critical thinking, what I think you're doing, critical thinking among us. I've been trying to follow along and, you know, do the exercises and stuff, and it's a new area of the brain, but important.
No, yes. It's not. It's not a new area of the brain, I strongly suspect.
Yes, ma'am. Now, I want to share something with you right quick about Free Your Mind Friday right quick. This is, I got, what I'm about to say, I got from the work of Dr. Patricia Newton, a black psychiatrist. And she was talking about the summary of our options. This was at a metamorphosis conference in D.C. not too long ago. Anyway, one of the first things we need to do is recognize we are at war, according to her. Recognize that we are at war. Come out of denial.
Amen.
And develop war strategies. The other 4 points she points to is rewire our neural networks, meaning our brains, which is another reason why I'm appreciative of the exercises you've been pushing, not pushing, but promoting, you know, recently. Mm-hmm. Understand our history and our culture. Insulate our children. Promote civic mental health. Those are some of the points that she offered during this conference. And I was glad to be able to witness her presentation, but yeah, coming out of denial and recognizing we are at war. And one other thing, right quick, and I know it's pressed for time, this so-called Christmas season, what have you, I know that the white Jesus syndrome, I think that's a problem for a lot of non-white people. I think that's part of spiritual and mental enslavement and putting people to sleep and in denial. We've only been... When I say we, I'm talking about descendants of enslaved Africans, been out of formal slavery for less than 150 years. And all that trauma, all those centuries of traumas jacked us up, severely jacked us up. We were walking wounded to a degree. And that's part, we need to come out of denial for that too. And I don't pretend to speak for everybody. I just have to, you know, try to speak for myself. And, I'm wondering, there's some things that need to be done that probably don't need to be advertised on a big radio show either, I imagine. So I guess that's all I wanted to say. I appreciate you taking my call. Oh, one last thing. This thing, Neely Fuller has this thing called, he defined this process called racial dislocation confusion, where the system of white supremacy keeps non-white people unstable, keeps them squatting, keeps them on the move, you know, puts their things on the sidewalk.
All right. So the music is here, which means I am definitely out of time. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us. Surround yourself.
In darkness, and babies can't see the light. If we don't say it's wrong, then they say it's right. Say we got a feel for each other, let our brother know we're here. Got to get the message, send it out.